Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters. Hey. So let's see. So what else is happening in the good old Cambridge, Massachusetts?
Okay.
Right. One thing I think I'll say.
You go. Go ahead.
I don't usually follow school department news right. nearly as closely as parents and other interested parties
right.
do.
Yeah.
But I just happened to tune in this past week to a school committee governance committee or something like that. I don't even remember what it was. But they were actually having a discussion about, as it were, about the superintendent question, because Kenneth Saleem is going to be leaving his job at the end of the academic year. Mm-hmm. And though I suppose they could go, work, lickety split and get themselves a new permanent replacement, the more likely outcome is they go through a big, elongated process.
I think so. Yeah,
and then they would still have to have somebody who would be the interim superintendent.
Okay.
In the meantime, I mean, you know, or you could get the interim who turns out to be the perfect choice internally, and then just go with that as the permanent superintendent, which would be perfectly okay with me. You know, this notion that somehow existing out in the universe is this perfect candidate.
All the time and money it takes too. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sorry for being all parochial about this, but I still generally would defer towards bringing in somebody who is pretty familiar with this Cambridge district already.
Right.
And if there was a person within the school department administration who was a really good candidate who would be up to speed in like a nanosecond, I think that would be pretty good to do. But you know, the problem is that these are political decisions, and they're looking for a mythical beast, who is somehow going to be the great visionary. I don't know that I believe
visionaries. How do you know they're going to do that?
I don't. Well, it's just that that's what they do in the past. They do the big national search. They hire a search firm. They bring in people who are pretty good.
These are different times. I know. These are different times.
I know, but maybe we can just be a little more down to earth now.
There's so much more to have to do right now that I think we just need somebody competent that knows the system and.
Yeah. No, and I just hope they're good at that. The part I tuned into, as it were was I think it was really a discussion. I didn't know it at first, and then I realized, they are just deciding on an interim person. And they actually, one person, I think it was Aisha Wilson, was pretty said, can I just nominate somebody right now and we can vote on it? And they said, well, yeah, you could do that.
Yeah.
And then people said, whoa, wait a minute. You know, people accuse us of non-transparency and all this and that. And
why? You're doing it right out in the open.
I was saying to myself, yeah, go for it, girl. Yeah. And I know of at least two very competent people within the administration who would be just ideal, but they didn't name any names, so I thought, okay, fine. But so now an ad hoc committee will come back with a name. They will ask any person or persons whether they're actually interested, and then they'll come back to the full school committee, and then they'll say, okay, how about this person? And then they'll probably do a vote, and that could actually happen pretty soon.
I hope so.
Yeah, and then they'll go through the intergalactic search for the perfect mythical superintendent who will come in with lots of fancy words like, what was the, innovation agenda?
I don't know.
Remember that, right?
I don't know. I just learned a new one. It's not new. Onboarding. Have you heard about that one? You know what onboarding is?
I've heard it, but I forget.
It's something to do with a new employee or a prospective employee, and it's an onboarding appointment. It's basically an interview. But, and it's from the 70s because I had to look it up because it's now in use. So I don't know.
There was a time, some years ago, I must have been hopelessly bored. I started actually going to some school committee meetings up at the meeting cafeteria at CRLS.
Yeah.
And that's when I learned something very interesting, which is that when your person joins the school committee, it takes about a week before you start adopting this their own private language that they use there.
Okay.
The terms that outside of them, I would go, what does that even mean?
But so they use the whole terminology.
I mean, that's the first place I heard the phrase, we're talking around issues of fill in the blank. You're talking around issues?
Oh, I bet that's changed though. I bet there's new terminology.
Now. Oh, yeah, definitely. Because, edu-speak is like its own, it's like a burgeoning field now.
Well, yeah. I mean, the diversity, equality,
How about scaffolding?
Oh, I like that.
I like that one. Yeah, yeah.
Onboarding and scaffolding.
Onboarding and scaffolding. You know, we ought to basically, we should do an entire show where we'd use nothing but nonsense speak, borrowed from actual words used.
You know what? There's probably a podcast out there that already does this.
I think it would be great fun, you know.
Or a website.
Yeah. I mean, I do have to say, I think maybe this year, if I'm in good mood, I'll maybe think about doing another April 1st edition of Cambridge
that's
Civic
coming up soon.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, you know it. It's
yeah, be- yeah. So maybe we'll do a little bit of that, you know, so that'll be something. So there was, I guess, since we last did a show, which was on Groundhog Day.
Right.
They did a, that was the day after a canceled city council meeting, which then occurred the following day.
Oh, you're right. That's
on February 3rd.
Right. That's right. It was on February 3rd. Right.
And then we had one 5 days later, last week on Monday on the 8th, you know, and there were some interesting issues that have sort of been floating. Well, we can talk a little about that too, but I think one thing I kind of got a kick out of was there was a city council order from Denise Simmons wanting to change the name of Fairmont Avenue because delivery people were confusing it with Fairmont Street. And I thought to myself, if I was a longtime resident of Fairmont Avenue or Fairmont Street for that matter, I don't think I would really want some city councilor just changing my address on me. And I thought to myself, well, okay, what's going to happen? So anyway, she then exercised her charter right. And then in the subsequent meeting, withdrew the order as if to say, maybe we should talk to people on Fairmont first.
There's a lot of streets that I think that have an avenue or a circle or a street, you know, and
there is a logic to some of them, like Inman Street has Inman Place coming off of it. Austin, there is an Austin Park, I think, which is close to where Vail Court is. And that's because it used to come off of Austin Street.
But there's a Walker Street, a Walker Circle, and a Walker Terrace.
Yeah, but they're usually in proximity.
They're not all together. Well, one of them isn't, I don't think. So people.
Right.
But the point is, you just can't go there.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so I thought that was sort of a little bit of comic relief.
Yeah.
They did have another set of wild day of, I called it robotic talk. So I think it was actually started out with a hostile architecture one, but then it became a big discussion about the 11 of 15 Green Street wet shelter that was state funded.
Oh yeah.
Which has funding, which will go to the end of March, I believe.
No, and April 30th, I think.
Is it April 30th?
Yeah.
And then some people want that the city should then pick up the tab and then continue that so that we would have two wet shelters when in fact none of our surrounding towns have any. And you know,
really?
Anyway, so,
is that true?
Well, Boston, yes, but you know, basically if you're in Arlington and you have a problem,
you come here.
The alcohol or substance, but they just drive them to Cambridge and drop them here. You know, but what happened was it's becoming, you've seen it before and we've talked about it before. Yeah. It's a new phenomenon of the the robots coming up for public comment, reading from a script.
They're all part of this group, or a lot of them are Harvard students.
The latest group is part of this. It's Harvard Young Democratic Socialists.
Right, and then there's the right. Yeah, but I heard the same people like almost weekly.
Same thing. Well, you know, I had a kick. What I did was I actually before the meeting.
Yeah.
Actually, maybe what I'll do is I'll actually find this What I actually did for that meeting was I actually found on a website the exact template for what they were telling public speakers to use.
Oh, this is the rights for housing.
So before the meeting, I actually put up the public comment template on the website a few hours before the meeting, and then much to my delight, during the meeting, I could actually read the very words they were being spoken at the meeting. And I thought to myself, boy, if that isn't a complete absence of sincerity.
Should accept by, and then the mayor had to keep reminding people these amendments aren't even.
They're already before the council, But the thing is that these people here didn't even know.
I know.
But they just sort of put them all up there.
I was yelling at the screen because, I mean, I'm all for people you know, but it just seems like you just call out the troops, you take up time. They could have emailed this. You don't have to speak. It's the same, some of the same, Piper, somebody. I mean, are they going to be voting? Probably, maybe.
But
it's just annoying. I mean,
well, you know, it's sort of like,
together. Do a group
I call it, it's like, you know? I like to think democracy is a process where people talk to each other. But this is like democracy by the pound. Like, let me generate 100 or 500 names.
Call out. I mean, it's really calling out my constituents.
Yeah, you're allowed 2 minutes. So let's see. So you use up your 2 minutes. And if we run 60 of us together, we can use up 120 minutes.
Yeah.
It's sort of like we're not actually having arguments. We're just weighing time now. And they're not really contributing a whole lot, you know.
No.
I mean, to their credit, and again, I have some issues with some of the city councilors, but there were some councilors like Council McGovern, who basically, after all the rhetoric, would just come back and just say, well, this is what's actually true.
Yeah.
And completely counter them. And I kind of wish that could happen a little more ongoing. By the way, just as one particularly, I think one of the people during public comment made, you know, actually several people raised issues about them clearing out a campsite in Central Square where, you know, sort of under the hostility toward problematic people. As if to say, oh, they were just sort of peacefully, you know, toasting marshmallows in front of the Salvation Army building, you know.
Is that where it was? You know where it was?
Yeah, actually, I happened to come by while they were clearing it out. And then I talked to some of the people a little bit later. What the various public commenters didn't know, but I'll tell them right now if they're tuning in.
When they
cleared it out, there was a carpet, literally a carpet of hypodermic needles, over 300 that were cleared out there. There was a clear and present public health danger associated with the site. So if people just sort of think, oh, there's just a few people down on their luck, sorry, no.
Yeah.
No. This is a pretty serious matter. And
these are our residents of Cambridge. And yes, some may be, but
well, a lot of the people actually who are in these encampments, they're not from here. They come here because they know that we're a lot more tolerant than most places. So it's sort of a safe place. And I applaud the tolerance, but it's an invitation for continued troubles in many, many ways. So anyway, I don't know what the ultimate goal is, but, you know, honestly, anybody who's arguing that somehow we should be very friendly toward people sleeping in subways and doorways rather than actually finding actually.
Well, why not? You know, I was thinking they're all from Harvard. Some of them actually live in Harvard housing. Why not ask their own university to maybe look at all, they must have dorm rooms. Are they?
Last year, they were doing things like that. But I honestly don't think this is about solving problems so much as it is about political organizing.
No, I understand that. But they say, let's get the hotels. But why don't they just go to their own, why don't they ask Harvard to house them? I'm not saying they would. I'm just saying it just seems to me like, I don't know. There's empty rooms a lot of places.
You can ask. You can certainly ask. I think they have been asked.
Maybe they have. I don't know.
I think city council have asked the universities to help.
No, but I want these students.
Right. But let's not forget that MIT turned the whole gymnasium into a COVID center, you know, with beds, cots laid out here, you know, it actually, these places never ended up getting used.
What about the site on Albany Street? Was that MIT related?
240 Albany is, that's MIT property.
That's a wet shelter, right?
That is a wet shelter. Yeah. It was originally trailers at 240 Albany that were located there sort of as a temporary thing. It was never meant to be permanent.
Right.
I
didn't know that.
Then there was some mechanism. They were actually going to try and move it to 380 Green Street. Some of us at the time said, wait a minute, making that a permanent fixture right in the heart of Central Square.
Not a good idea.
You know, right over by the post office would not be the best thing to do. Mm-hmm. So we looked for an alternative. MIT eventually came in. They cut a deal where it was sort of like a swap. We said, we will agree to not only keep it down where it is, but we'll even build the building.
Yeah.
For them to house with more beds than were there when it was just trailers.
Yeah.
But we want something for this. And that's when Dock Street and a few other streets in Kendall Square were turned over and sort of were decommissioned as regular public roads. as a kind of a deal, you know. Yeah. So this goes back a long ways, but you know, and 240 Albany is sort of the epicenter of a lot of the crime reports. You know, if somebody gives an address, it's 240 Albany.
But at least it's not surrounded by, you know, it's more, I don't know, it's a little more isolated. So
it's a little more isolated. Yeah. And but the thing
I mean,
is,
I walk by near there almost.
The big question is, and I think the city can answer this in a good way, is that, you know, what other things are being done to help people who are capable of transitioning away from a substance abuse life toward a better life. You know, I give nothing but applause to all the people and the programs who are actually successfully doing that. But the thing is that, you know, if nobody else is doing it and Cambridge wants to host it, basically we're going to always have new clients coming in from all around. And that,
why can't we build like a more rooming house type of congregate housing?
Well, in a way, this is what the 11 and 15 Green Street facility was supposed to do, but within a few weeks, it had had multiple drug overdoses and a suicide.
Right. Well, no, obviously you'd have to have a better structure, but that kind of housing
structure.
And also requirements. Maybe you would have to show some kind of connection to Cambridge. You can't just have, I mean, we can't house everybody.
I know.
That's some other,
you know, it's like, I can respect the intention to want to solve all the world's problems.
Right.
But unilateral solutions on the part of one city doesn't solve problems. And in fact, in some respects, paradoxically, it actually, it worsens the problems locally.
Right.
You know, if you set up the facility and then becomes known as the place you go, then substance abuse people will come to Cambridge, and so we will basically solve.
Right. But
we will take on the problems of everybody.
Right. But
else.
I'm talking about a step, not a wet. I'm talking about congregate housing for people that have gone through a program that are.
I would love to see more in the way of sort of state funding assisted rooming houses with staff.
They work because single people are not in a good situation.
No, that's right. And we, you know, even Cambridge used to actually have a fair number of SROs, single room occupancy places.
Tim Toomey has brought this up over the years.
Actually, my house, where I'm sitting now, this room
was
a room of an SRO at one time.
All right.
It was my second floor where I live was five rooms of a rooming house.
I bet a lot of houses, if people looked at their history, they probably were.
Yeah, that's right.
They needed workers, and workers had to, you know. Yeah.
Well, it's also it wasn't a hot real estate market. It was pre Kendall Square, and you know, it was a very different kind of city, you know. And one by one, the SROs just sort of disappeared. But that doesn't mean that it's not a bad idea. I mean, I think it could still be made into a pretty good idea, but it does require money and supervision, and hopefully we can find ways of doing that, you know, amongst all the other great initiatives that we actually do.
Right.
Right. And I, by the way, I think the some of the same people when they were commenting about the Green Street facility, they kept coming back about the hostile architecture.
Oh, it was the same group. Yeah.
And then some of the counselors had to say, excuse me, but we already voted on that. Okay. Can you move on?
We're gonna talk about that.
By the way, I could, one of the way I could tell that of the cluelessness of some of the people, and it is funny to say this because they are supposedly Harvard people, right? Is just how they pronounce the word Cambridge.
Why?
It was Cambridge.
Really?
I didn't hear Cambridge. Yeah. Really? Cambridge? You just get off the bus? Did you?
I didn't pay attention to that.
Yeah, no, they all, most of them had a kind of a faraway quality, I dare say. So, by the way, on the kind of municipal election, not that I want to go into, because there's nothing to report. Basically, in the latter months of 2020, there were four or five.
So your list hasn't changed?
Hasn't changed a bit. You know, and I find that curious in a way. You know,
what about the money raise? Do you look at the money?
It's slow. There are a few candidates. The rich are getting richer. You know, so basically, Zondervan and McGovern are packing it in. You know, and you know, readying for the What did they, when we invaded Iraq, one of the times we have to meet them with overwhelming force. So I think that's kind of the plan there, is to basically raise, you know, $70,000 and then basically just try and run over those $20,000 campaigns. That seems to be trending in that direction.
I did notice one of the candidates, Tonya Hicks, also ran for a board seat.
Tanaya, or I think
Tanaya. All right, you're right.
She got a board seat on the
Cambridgeport neighborhood.
Yes, I saw that as well. Yeah. I think that's kind of what anybody who wants to run for political office should have already been doing that for a few years. So
right.
I don't want to see people just doing it so they can say sure. I'm this in time for an election. But really, people should be more actively involved. I didn't go to that meeting, so I don't know. I mean, some of the other characters, I at least one person I don't think has been involved in much of anything. Another person has been, but not in any kind of official neighborhood association. Mm-hmm. Not neighborhood associations are just one part of the Cambridge civic puzzle, right. You know.
But usually you should be involved in an issue or something, whatever it is. It could be housing, you know, I don't know.
Just be active. I mean, I've always said that you can even be active in your church, you know, and that's completely valid. It just means you're involved. You are part of the, you know, an active member of the community rather than, you know, just a political person who's sort of dropping in.
Looking for a place to, you know, get you.
Yeah. Just like I'm going to start my career here politically doing this, you know, that I want my politics, local politics, to grow organically, you know.
Oh, I like that. That's a good one. I'd like my local politics.
Right. You know, but, you know, if somebody just sort of drops in, you know, and barely knows the town, and, you know, to me but they're full of ideology. Well, that will appeal to some people who vote purely on ideological basis, but to me, that's really not how voters should be voting. They should really understand where a person's coming from and who they are and their familiarity with, you know, things specific to the town that they're actually.
You know, what bothers me is that the candidates that have a link to the universities, either because they went there or they're, you know, like the Harvard Connect, they can get 1,500 people to be registered to vote for them.
You know,
I mean, you don't need a whole lot to get on that for, you know.
You know, that has been a theory that has been known for a long time.
Oh, Nadine Mazin.
Nadine Mazin actually worked it.
Leland Cheung
actually capitalized on that.
Yeah.
As well. Years and years ago, David Clem was a person who was elected. He served one term. Okay. But he managed to, you know, gather up a quota worth of votes. The difficulty is that you can register people, you get them to sort of promise they'll vote for you, and then you find out a few weeks after the election, when you're looking at the corrected list of who actually voted, you realize most of them didn't actually show up and vote.
Is that true?
That's how it used to be. I think that's not so much the truth.
Social media and the pressure, it's just like
I think you can actually do much more effective social media campaigns now.
Oh, yeah,
and you
than can, a good 10 years
you can,
ago.
You can, you know, whip up the voter discipline as well to actually show up.
Look at 74 million people voted for Trump. That didn't happen out of nowhere.
Yeah, I know.
I know. I brought his name up again. I am sorry.
It's time to move on.
By the way, it is 100 million doses in 100 days. I
100 million doses in 100 days. Yeah. That's great, you know, and you know, let's keep it going, man.
We'll see.
My number will come up one of these days. I haven't even thought about how to do it these days.
I'm hoping that my health system lets me know. I think they will. Are you part of a health system?
In principle, but I've signed on. I don't know who they are. I don't know who my primary care physician is.
Good luck. Go to Fenway. You'll love it. Sign up at Fenway.
I want to go to Fenway for a baseball game. Thank you very much.
Well, maybe you can buy a ticket and get your shot at the same time.
Now there's a nice promotion.
There's
a good idea.
That is a good idea. Wow. Well, you know, by the time we get them going, they might be selling tickets because it's March. It'll be in March probably when.
Yeah.
They let us get them.
Yeah, no, it could be coming. It's absolutely sure. But so anyway, that's what's coming. By the way, there was one other thing I'll just mention because I only have partial information. I was a little curious. You know, the city manager appointed this task force on the future of public safety.
Oh, right. That was a while ago.
Kind of, kind of a sketchy yeah. bunch of appointments, in my humble opinion.
Not all of them, but
then he said, oh, we'll be starting to meet in January. And then, okay, I'm looking for a notice. I'm looking for nothing.
They haven't met
yet. Finally, I sent a message to the city saying, like, actually, the police department, I said, is this task force actually meeting? And he said, oh, they met on February 2nd. I go, well, nice to know, like 2 weeks later. But he's, you know, again, I there was not a single listing. Like, if I wanted to sort of tune in, because you know it had to be in Zoom, right?
But are task force meetings public?
I don't know if they are or aren't, but this is co-chaired by two city councilors. So if it's if it's not accessible by the public, it damn well ought to be when you're starting to put elected officials in
co-chairs. I didn't know it was co-chaired by city council.
Yes. So I expect I'm going to be a little pushy about this one because I wanted to monitor it because I'm a little worried that, I'm all for reforming what needs to be reformed, but I am not a big fan of just like, let's revolutionize the Cambridge Police Department because of perceptions about what's happened or should have happened in cities far away. So I'm gonna ride herd on this a little bit. And so they did meet on February 2nd. If there is a recording, I'll find out about it. And if there's a meeting, I wanna actually at least tune in. I don't know if I'll say much of anything, but
put that on your website. So
if I find out about it, then I'll sort of do that, you know. So anyway, that's many other things coming up. So I said there is this meeting. There's a meeting on if you're interested in campaign finance limits, there's an ordinance committee happening February 24th at 5 o'clock. And real estate transfer fee is not until March 10th, so that's a topic for another day. So
and our next show will be March 2nd, first Tuesday in March.
Yeah, that sounds sounds great. So
and we're going to anyway, sign off.
That's it. So I'll see you next time on Cambridge Inside Out.
Stay healthy.